Before we proceed with questions, I want to take the opportunity to congratulate the Chief Minister on his being elected as a Benchmaster of the Middle Temple. He is the second of Gibraltar Chief Ministers to have been so elected in the footsteps of Sir Joshua Hassan. Congratulations on the honour. Thank you. We continue with answers to all our questions. Question number 696 for 2017. The Honourable Ms. Andy Hassan-Nawam.
Has government made any decision yet in connection with the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pensioners Association following the association's discussions with government for the last 6 years and also following the general statement of the Chief Minister in his budget address of this year?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased to be able to inform the House that the trustees of Community Care have now informed the government that in coming days they will be making a statement specifically on the additional financial support measures for pensioners in order to ensure that the standard of living of such pensioners keeps up with the growth in the economy. The reason the statement has not been made before today is that this question has been pending answer in this month.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate that answer, but as the Chief Minister might understand, we have seen assurances twice in the 2011 manifesto, 2015 manifesto. We've had announcements in the budget. We've had union representatives making announcements on Viewpoint and GBC, also announcements in the May Day rally this year. How can the Pensioners Association be assured that this time these announcements are for real, and can we have any idea of an implementation date as well?
Mr. Speaker, I'm very sure that you woefully confused. The announcements by the union leader that he's referring to relate to the introduction of the principle of pensions in the private sector for those who are working now. That's completely different to the issue on which he has asked me a question, supposedly on behalf of the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pension Association. Incidentally, an association that my government is the only government to have entertained, and an association with which we have had a long association. But it is true to say that we have not been able to make an announcement before. What I have said is that it's very likely that, that these payments would not be payments which the government would be responsible for, that they would be matters which would be dealt with Community Care. We have had discussions with Community Care. I said I expected to say something in September, which has not been possible. She filed questions in mid-October. That stopped the clock because if we answer questions, once honourable members have filed a question, they get upset that things happen. And so what I'm saying to her is, the minute this session is over, I understand the trustees of Community Care are ready to make an announcement. But it is not an announcement which relates to the issues which union leaders have been dealing with and have been raising in programmes and have made other announcements in relation to, which we are also progressing on. This is a separate issue. It's about existing pensioners, not future pensioners, who are receiving amounts which in many instances are even below the minimum wage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can the Chief Minister give us any idea of an implementation date?
Mr. Speaker, I always hesitate to deploy with her the sort of remark that I deploy with others. But she should know that when it comes to Community Care, the government is not in any control, and therefore the government is not going to be able to make a statement as to implementation. The reason for that is not to try and avoid a question. The reason for that is not to try and avoid giving information to members of the Private Sector Workers and Pensioners Association, for whom I have the very highest regard and who have done a magnificent job in advocating for those who might be less well off in our community. But because Community Care is an independent charity,
and if it were perceived not to be an independent charity, then what it does so successfully for Gibraltarian resident pensioners, it might not be able to continue doing.
So, Speaker, can the Chief Minister give us any assurances that he may ensure that things move on as independently as he can from that further position once he's told us that there will be an announcement? If we don't hear anything, can we hear something back from the Chief Minister?
Well, put it this way, Mr. Speaker, the Chief Minister stands by what he says in this House. She is not going to get the opportunity to embarrass me by asking in Parliament next month whether what I said in answer to question 696, 2017, is going to materialise in December instead of in November. But the answer I have given her talks about the aspects of this that the government had to deal with itself. That I have told her in the context of this answer has now been dealt with. Action now moves to an independent third party who must remain independent for the reasons I have already indicated. Now, if she'll excuse me for saying, if she stops playing to the gallery and lets things just play out in the coming days, as this statement I've just read suggests, she might find that the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pensions Association are very pleased indeed with the work that the government has done on their behalf in the past 6 years.
Question number 671 of the Honourable Roy Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I may ask the Chief Minister, the scheme that is envisaged to be announced, is this going to be on the same form or structure as the previously discussed universal credit scheme that was communicated to the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pensioners Association?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for that question from the person in a caretaker leadership capacity in the party that didn't entertain them when it had the opportunity to do so as a government. Because he too needs to understand that what I've said is that an announcement is going to be made by an independent third party. And so therefore, it would not be an independent third party if I was making announcements on behalf of it in this House.
For Mr. Clinton. Mr. Speaker, just to be absolutely clear, Community Care is an independent charity. It's run by independent trustees, and the governments from both sides of whatever political persuasion throughout the years have always defended the independence of Community Care. And therefore, although this is an announcement that the Chief Minister is making in answer to a question from the Honourable Lady, just to be absolutely crystal clear, this is an initiative from independent trustees who have made independent decision to effectively pay this money at this particular rate, but it's not a decision that is a decision of the government. There might well have been discussions in the background, but this is an independent decision from independent trustees out of the resources of that particular trust.
Mr. Speaker, that's absolutely right, and this is an issue that is very topical. In fact, in the news overnight, people may have seen the issues that now surround Lord Ashcroft in respect of the management of a trust beyond the reach of the trustees who should be making independent decisions, according to what we've read in some newspapers and seen on some television programs. And that's why the statement I have read simply says that I'm very pleased to be able to inform the House that the trustees of Community Care have informed the government, because a question has been asked of the government and I've sought their views, that they will be making an announcement about what they have agreed to be paying. It is true that we have made representations to the trustees on behalf of the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pensioners Association, which the Honourable Member will have heard me say before in this House. But I entirely support the way that he's phrased the independent decision-making, which must occur in the context of this trust, Community Care Trust, as there must be independent decision-making in respect of every single trust. And that's why, Mr. Speaker, no GSLP chief minister will ever consider community care a ticking time bomb or anything like that.
Mr. Speaker, just one final question on this. If for any reason the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pension Association are not satisfied with the forthcoming announcement, to whom should they turn? Should it be the government or community care?
Well, Mr. Speaker, certainly it shouldn't be to the party that had the opportunity of assisting them when they were in government and did not.
Mr. Speaker, I don't believe I have an answer to my question.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker. It certainly shouldn't be to the party that had the opportunity of assisting them when they were in government and did not.
Mr. Speaker, I know he may have been made a bencher of his inner and middle temple, but we're here in this parliament, and I've asked a very simple question on behalf of the people in this gallery. He doesn't even have to look at the camera, he can go and look at them directly. But he can turn to them and tell them that they're not happy, who do they get sworn to?
Oh, I see, Mr. Speaker. So the leader of, or well, the putative or current or caretaker leader of the GSD has now taken to making representations for the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pensioners Association, the group that they ignored when they were in government. Well, I see. Well, Mr. Speaker, if that is the question, then what the Gibraltar Private Sector Workers and Pensioners Association know is that they can continue to turn to the only chief minister that has entertained them in the time that they've had an opportunity of doing something. And I know that they're all there. They're very welcome, like every citizen of this nation, to come and see us and hear what we have to say, in particular when we're fulfilling our commitments to people, those commitments which we acquired when the party that he now leads failed to even meet them.
Question number 600.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Chief Minister has indicated that the trustees of community care will be looking at 8%, 7.8%. 8% is the increase in GDP. Increases in GDP. Does he know what would be the position, for example, or perhaps the discussions haven't gone that far, bearing in mind that it's the trustees that make the decision. But if there is a slowdown in the economy, and for example, there is no economic growth, do we then envisage that there will be no increase in payments because of it?
Mr. Speaker, I'm quite surprised that the Honourable Gentleman, who was Minister for Justice in the government that did not entertain this collective, is now pursuing what would happen in the event of the economy not growing, given that when the economy was growing, he, as Minister for what must now be referred to as injustice, failed to address the issue. But, Mr. Speaker, I think from my own logic, what would not make sense is that there should be any group that might see their rewards grow when others don't. So if the economy were not to grow, and therefore if inflation were to be at zero, for example, and growth in the economy can be measured in many different ways, but one of the ways in which it is also determined is if there is growth by way of inflation, and if state pensions didn't grow, then it would be surprising to see other benefits also grow with the related pensions, but that would not be a matter for me. He's asking me a question that I should simply have answered by saying it's entirely hypothetical, because he's asking me to, in effect, do that which he warned me not to do, and put myself in the position of the trustee and make a decision for them, if only by way of indication, if not by determination. In which case, if what he's asking for is by way of indication, not determination, that's hypothesis, and that is not an appropriate question in this matter.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman, I have to say, even in my semi-retirement, managing to put a lure me out of my semi-retirement state. Now, thank you very much.
Mr. Speaker, there is, and this is precisely part of why I asked the question that I asked. The Honourable Gentleman has stood up. He has, on the one hand, attempted to claim credit for this initiative by answering the question from the Honourable Lady. And then on the other, he has said,
as must be the case, because it's the trustees of community care, of course, it must be the position. It's not the government's decision, it's a decision of community care. So he cannot have it both ways. He cannot claim credit and say, because I have entertained, and I am the one that is gaining the credit for it, but it's a decision that is being taken by the trustees of community care. It is a decision of the trustees of community care. It's a decision of the trustees of community care. But he is wrong, Mr. Speaker, because he is wrong in his analysis, and there is a serious point. Forget about all the political toing and fro. There is a serious point here, and it's this, that you can have a situation where you can have rampant inflation, for example, and an economy that is contracting. You could have that kind of situation. I'm just trying to drill down into what would happen. Now, he doesn't have the answer, But what would happen if there is a contraction in the economy, but there is a growth in inflation, and therefore, effectively, these individuals would be losing out. Losing out because the economy contracts, but also losing out because inflation increases. I wonder what the position would be in that situation.
Mr. Speaker, I miss him so much. I never thought I would. I really never thought I would. Mr. Speaker, I miss him because he manages to conflate and not clarify in the process of seeking to answer questions. There is a very important point here. And the very important point, Mr. Speaker, is that there are people in our community who do not have pension provision made available to them, which allows them to have a dignified retirement. And that is the point that was made to me in 2011. And that is the point that I have analysed with the government in Cabinet. And that is the issue which I told the House before we would be making representations to community care about. And that is what community care have now, as a result of those representations, told us they will seek to address in a statement that they're about to make. Now, what the Honourable Gentleman is asking me to do is to look forward to a situation which has not occurred and say, how will it be dealt with? That is a hypothetical question. It is a question, Mr. Speaker, that is not in order under the rules. But I will tell him, Mr. Speaker, why it is also, in my view, not a relevant question. Because in Gibraltar, at least in the time that I have been in office, and indeed in the time that my predecessor, Chief Minister, was in office, pensions, state pensions, have always grown by the rate of inflation, not with a view to the growth of the GDP. So, Mr. Speaker, looking into the future is a mug's game, and I won't do it. But by looking at the past, I can tell the Honourable Gentleman that everything that relates to pensions in this community has gone up based on the growth of inflation, not on the overall growth of the economy.
May I point out to the Chief Minister that during the years when I was in government, state pensions, old age pensions, were increased in accordance with the increases in average earnings. Just for a record. Nothing to do with inflation.
I wasn't around then, and I don't want to debate with you, but those who were seem to recall that there might have been some instances when that was not quite the case, but we're not here to debate. It's question time.
Question number 671 of 2017. The Honourable R.M. Clinton on behalf of the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, can the government confirm that it intends to create an emergency services hub at the work site?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, this continues to be one of the opportunities potentially available.
Mr. Speaker, just by way of clarification, would the Chief Minister then confirm that there is a project or there are plans setting to move at least the fire brigade to another location?
There's a similar question in the order paper later on, Mr. Speaker.
Question number 673 of 2017. The Honourable C.N. Hammonds.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister say if there is an expiry date in the purchase agreement for the bus fleet of the buyback clause, and if so, when that date is?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, there is no expiry date.
Question number 674 of 2017. The Honourable C.N. Hammonds.
Mr. Speaker, when does government intend to move the current City Fire Brigade fire station, as proposed in its 2011 manifesto, and to what location?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with questions 675 and 693 to 695.
Question 675 of 2017. The Honourable T.N. Hammonds.
Where does government intend to move GBC to, as proposed in its 2011 manifesto, and when does it consider that the move might take place?
Question number 693 of 2017. The Honourable L.F. Jamas.
Mr. Speaker, can the government explain why the roof gardens displayed in their 2011 manifesto on affordable housing projects never materialised, and confirm if they intend to provide roof gardens in the affordable projects recently announced where artist impressions provide these?
Question number 694 of 2017.
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable L.F. Jamas.
Mr. Speaker, does the government intend to construct the 400 outdoor amphitheatre promised in their 2011 manifesto?
Question number 695 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Jamas.
Mr. Speaker, will the government be expanding domiciliary care to include cooking, shopping and household chores as promised in their 2011 manifesto?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, questions 674, 675 and 693 to 695 relate to manifesto commitments of the GSLP Liberals for the 2011 general election. As a matter of principle, the government will not subject itself to examination by the honourable members about pre-election facts and periods, because in a democracy, elections renew the mandate of the government and they draw a line under the argument of the opposition up to that date, because the electorate have expressed their judgment on those political arguments.
And Mr. Speaker, from that answer, can I just confirm with the Chief Minister that therefore all or any of the many non-delivered commitments of the 2011 manifesto will now not be delivered, or that the government will not in any way be accountable for their delivery, including the move of GBC and including the move of the City Fire Brigade?
Is that despite having seen the expressions of interest here announced in the Chronicle a couple of weeks ago, Mr. Speaker?
I don't think that answered the question, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman has seen in the local press that there is an advertisement in respect of the relocation of GBC. So is he asking me the question in light of that public statement which he will have seen in the local press?
Mr. Speaker, I haven't seen that advertisement in the local press. And I don't know if that advert went out after this question was submitted or not, but perhaps the Chief Minister could clarify where it is the intention to move GBC, which is the nature of the question.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm not here to answer questions about things which are public. And the Honourable Gentleman is expected to at least keep up with the local newspapers, Mr. Speaker.
And there has been an advertisement in the local press, not when honourable members filed questions. It wasn't a statement. It was an advertisement seeking expressions of interest for a particular site in Gibraltar, including for the relocation of GVC. Now, it is really quite something if a member of Her Majesty's loyal opposition doesn't read the papers, Mr. Speaker.
And Mr. Speaker, with regard to the City Fire Brigade, is it the intention to move, or has an advert gone out in similar vein? Because I missed that one as well.
Mr. Speaker, he didn't miss an advert. He missed an answer a moment ago. Because the Honourable, the current acting leader of the opposition, let me rephrase that. The Honourable, the current acting leader of the current opposition,
as far as I am concerned, and therefore by consequence following when the Honourable Daniel Seaton resigned as leader of the opposition, I was asked by the majority members of the opposition of the GAC to recognise the Honourable Roy Clinton as leader of the opposition. Consequently, we have recognised him here in Parliament, and he is being, therefore, paid by the Treasury the appropriate allowance in respect of that. So as far as I am concerned, until I am told otherwise, Mr. Roy Clinton is the leader of the opposition.
Except, Mr. Speaker, he has referred to himself as caretaker and acting. But I have no problem, Mr. Speaker. Let me put it this way. The current acting leader of the GSD, his party, has just asked me a question about the emergency services hub at Rook, and I've just given him an answer about that. Didn't even have to read the papers, just had to keep his ears open.
Yes, and Mr. Speaker, I believe part of that answer was there was another question on the order paper which was specifically about the City Fire Brigade, not an emergency services hub. So I am talking about the City Fire Brigade, which was specifically committed to in the 2011 manifesto for it to be moved to another site. Now, the other question I do understand refers to an emergency services hub. I could see the two could go together. However, that was not clear, and when the Honourable, the leader of the opposition, asked a follow-up question specifically to the City Fire Brigade, the Chief Minister replied, there is a further question in the order paper referring specifically to the Fire Brigade, which is why I am now asking questions specifically about the Fire Brigade, because it does not necessarily follow that an emergency services hub would contain the City Fire Brigade, although, of course, it may do. It would.
Mr. Speaker, the reason why I asked questions about the 2011 manifesto is because the government at the time gave the undertaking in the manifesto that they would complete their manifesto commitment within the 4 years. However, there is part of one of the questions which is to do with the current manifesto and the plans which have been recently announced to do with the housing projects, whether those gardens, roof gardens, which didn't materialise in the 2011 affordable projects, the affordable projects done in the first term of office, and we didn't see them transpire, if those will be happening, given that they have been filmed once again in artist impressions and they didn't materialise in the last parliamentary legislature.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman told us in this House the last time we were here in a debate on matters relating to self-determination, but he continued to be a disciple of Sir Peter Caguana and some of the things that he had set out when he was leader of the GSD. What I have read out to him, Mr. Speaker, what I have read out to him about how you account in this House is word for word, Peter Caguana in answer to question 627 of 2007. It is actually vintage Caguana, if you've seen the performance on the day. The Honourable Gentleman, as an admirer of the former, of my predecessor, the former Chief Minister, would have enjoyed being in this House when he uttered those words. So, Mr. Speaker, in relation to the 2011 manifesto, we have the obligations that we have. I think it's clear that we are continuing the process of delivering. But in relation to the current housing that the Honourable Gentleman is talking about, but all that we have seen at the moment are outline designs, more about matting and look. It's not clear yet whether those will be the final architect's designs.
But if you look at the architect's designs announced at the time that the project got underway under the last manifesto, they have been built exactly as those who were purchasers and saw the designs actually were led to believe at the time that they bought. I will say something else in that respect, Mr. Speaker. If you care to look again, because we obviously is the person who have most recently read it from cover to cover, to at our 2011 New Dawn manifesto, we will see that Mons Calpe News has been built identically almost to the images that appeared in that magnificent manifesto for the 2011 General Election, which I'm reminded we were in the process of fighting this month, 36 months ago, no, 6 years ago, this month, 6 years ago.
Question number 676 of 2017. The Honourable T.A. Heaton.
Mr. Speaker, are there any plans to revise the Gibraltar Development Plan?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes, sir.
Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable the Chief Minister give an indication of when the exercise of revising the Gibraltar Development Plan will be completed?
No, Mr. Speaker, I cannot give an indication.
Can he at least inform the House as to whether the Gibraltar Development Plan will be binding upon the Development and Planning Committee?
Mr. Speaker, the position in respect of the Development Plan will continue to be the same under the current legislation, whether it is reviewed or not reviewed, and under the new legislation, provision will be made in relation to Gibraltar Development Plan, which is set out in that legislation. I've seen a draft, and I expect it will be published shortly.
Yes, thank you very much for that answer, but can you give any information as to whether there will be a tightening up of a requirement that the Development and Planning Commission basically adhere to the Gibraltar Development Plan? And there is a considerable amount of concern the people that I have spoken to from the Heritage Trust and indeed others, that there are a number of developments that have been built or are planned to be built, particularly within the walls of Gibraltar, that have been given the go-ahead by the Development and Planning Commission that do not comply with the Gibraltar Development Plan, and that it is important that there be clarity as to the legal status of the Gibraltar Development Plan. There is a school report, for example, that suggests that the Gibraltar Development Plan at the moment is binding on either the government or, and certainly the Development and Planning Commission takes a different view. But is there going to be clarity in relation to that and a tightening up of the requirement that the Development and Planning, the Gibraltar Development Plan be adhered to?
Mr. Speaker, that is a matter that will be clearer when the bill is published. There has been already a command paper which has led to a considerable number of representations made to the government. The government will publish a bill that will take into consideration those of the representations which we have believed to have merit. But all of these concerns, of course, Mr. Speaker, that the Honourable Gentleman refers to, do not equate to the considerable relief that is expressed to the government by those who are very pleased indeed that the DPC now sits in public, that it publishes its minutes, and that the debates of the DPC can be attended by any member of the public, and indeed that members of the public can make representations if they wish to object to a particular development, because it's contravened to the development plan, the current GSD development plan, which from memory I think was developed almost more than a decade after they took power. Mr. Speaker, all of that I think demonstrates that there is a better opportunity today
to give vent to those concerns in the context of decision making in front of the DPC, and that was the case when the DPC met secretly under the administration that he was a member of and didn't publish its minutes. But if I may end on a more conciliatory note, Mr. Speaker, I recall that in my early days of becoming politically aware, there were a raft of articles in a publication now defunct called The Democrat, I believe, which related to just this issue of the development plan, in particular in relation to a development over Roja Bay, which I think became known as Roja Plaza. And there, one particular practitioner from a firm he used to practice in set out in great detail in those articles his in-depth knowledge of planning law and whether or not the plan should be binding or not. I think that might have been putting, certainly for many, 86 or 87. It's a debate that has run and run, and I expect that the bill, when published, will deal with it.
Question number 676 of 2017. The Honourable D.A. Peaton. Sorry, 677. The Honourable D.A. Peaton.
Thank you very much. What is the government's current policy in relation to who should have the benefit of air miles accumulated as a consequence of the official travel of ministers?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the position of the government is set out in the ministerial
quote. Mr. Speaker, it is a ministerial quote that, as I understand it, is still not effective. Now, of course, again, not wishing to become unduly belligerent in my semi-retirement state, can I say that, of course, I recall, and he must recall as well, that when he was on this side of the House, that he would almost, it wasn't a monthly, but every time that we had a session of Parliament, he would ask about this particular issue, because he felt that it was an important one. And therefore, 6 years on, when can we expect that the Honourable Gentleman opposite take a leaf out of the Honourable Chief Minister's discourse when he was on this side of the House, and ensure that air miles that are accumulated as a consequence of ministerial travel are effectively going for the benefit of the taxpayer?
Already, Mr. Speaker, is the answer to that question, because that is the way in which this government has behaved even before we published the draft ministerial code, which I consider to be binding as far as I'm concerned, and indeed I think colleagues take the same attitude in relation to this. As I said in question 695 of 2008 to the then Chief Minister, I think the taxpayer is entitled to the credit for the miles that are paid for by his or her pounds, shillings and pence, and that is how we have acted from the moment that we were elected. But not every airline gives air miles, Mr. Speaker, and ministers now don't ensure, as they might have done in the past, which you might remember is also one of my bugbears, that they fly with the airline that gives them miles, even if it's more expensive for the taxpayer, simply because they're then able to spend them for themselves and their family. As was the case, Mr. Speaker, he will recall me saying, in the time that he was a minister in the former government, although I don't know what he uses his air miles for, but there was one particular individual who I was very fond of, Mr. Speaker, although he was on the other side of me, who was notorious for the collection of air miles, the spending of air miles on his own family's travel, and indeed, Mr. Speaker, other practices in relation to travel, which I won't deal with in the context of the council, but we can let you say that I acted in keeping with my own views from the minute that I was elected in relation to the council.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very glad to hear that, and indeed, therefore, the answer to the original question, it had nothing to do with the ministerial code, because the government, as I understand it, all the ministers, that's the answer the Honourable Gentleman, correct me if I'm wrong, all the ministers of the government have answered in accordance with that policy since they were elected in December 2008.
Mr. Speaker, that's the discussion we have in Cabinet with the Russian ministers. Thank you. People have a discussion reminding ourselves of what we call the lack of shame of practices before our time.
Question number 678 of 2017. The Honourable D.A. Peaton.
Mr. Speaker, Further to the answer to question, written question 119 of 2017, can the government please explain why the recruitment process for those AA vacancies is still on hold?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 686 to 689.
Question number 686 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Cannon.
Mr. Speaker, will the government consider, whilst it considers whether or not it is going to recruit AAs in the civil service, of ensuring the persons who are covering these positions from recruitment agencies receive the basic pay of the post they're covering and the minimum leave entitlement of civil service?
Question number 687 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Cameron.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a schedule of the assessment practice working in the public sector, including A, explain how the process of the assessment practice, B, reason for cover, and C, department providing services for?
Question number 688 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Cameron.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a schedule of offices in the public sector who are simply promoted, including A, the grade the officer holds, B, grade the officer has been simply promoted to, and C, stage simply promoted, and D, the department?
Question number 689 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Jammer.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a schedule of vacant posts in the public sector, including A, grade, B, dates of funding process from vacant, and C, department?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the GSLP Liberal government is committed to maintaining the number of civil servants at the level which the previous government had left it since December 2011. Between 2011 and 2015, the numbers will increase, not as a result of the representation from the staff side in the majority of cases, but in order to meet the demands created by the implementation of government manifesto commitments and other policy decisions. These additional civil service numbers are spread over the whole of the service and are therefore above the threshold inherited in 2011. As has been repeatedly stated, the government is now undertaking an efficiency review in the light of changing working methods and technology, in particular the introduction of e-government, which requires less manual processing of paperwork. Now, vacancies are therefore on hold to be reviewed once we see the effect of the implementation of the changes in technology. Given that the GSD, and in particular the former leader of the opposition, regularly criticized us for having increased invested in and growing the size of the civil service, it is incomprehensible that he should now, in the light of his alleged impending departure from this parliament, be pressing for positions to be filled when they became vacant. Indeed, I memorably recall Mr. Speaker's statements that in the GSD's view, the civil service was bloated. It is really quite remarkable, therefore, that we should now be seemingly asking for us to further increase the funding unless they change their position on this also in the past few months. As regards the rate of pay of supply workers, this is determined by the recruitment agencies that provide these workers. They are not employees of the Crown and will not be paid civil service salaries. In fact, Mr. Speaker, quite recently, I recall the acting caretaker leader of the party opposite and the leader of the opposition saying that the civil service pay is not based on merit. There is no merit in it at all, there is just relativity, he said. The Honourable Mr. Janet, Mr. Speaker, having been a civil servant, knows that prior to 2011, shortages of departments were not provided with supply staff. Departments were therefore expected to cope with shortages with the existing staff remaining. They had to cover the work of absent colleagues themselves or have individuals temporarily allocated to the departments where shortages were greater. Mr. Janet will also note that the introduction of supply staff is an initiative of the GSLP Liberal government in order to ease the pressure on civil servants and departments that were experiencing staff shortages for a variety of reasons. I'm not sure if this innovative and positive introduction of temporary cover is one of the things he was on about when he said almost exactly 2 years ago that he had seen things in the post office that worried him so much that he decided he had to stand for election with a party he has since left. There is, of course, no shortage of candidates in the European Fund for the supply list, given that being employed in the provision of supply services greatly improves the prospects of recruitment when vacancies arise. The experience gained is also useful when applying for vacancies that arise in the private sector. The public sector as a whole includes the civil service and the employees of government agencies, authorities, of companies, etc., but does not have a complement of posts in the way the civil service itself does. As a result, there are no vacant posts as such. That is to say, if one employee moves from one agency to another agency, authority, or company, or within the departments of any such entity, it is not the case that he or she leaves behind a vacancy that requires filling. This was, in fact, one of the greatest advantages that the GSC under Sir Peter Caguana put forward at the time that it decided to fragment the unified civil service and convert it into a ring of different employers at separate government agencies or private companies. The Honourable Mr. Lamas has said that he still believes in the positions set out and the whole host of it is set out by Sir Peter. I'm sure, therefore, that the fragmentation of the civil service, which I have alluded to, must have endured his support. The government believes that that fragmentation, ushered in by the GSC, has led to diseconomies of scale and ways of being explored of addressing and correcting this problem through the efficiencies which I have referred to at the beginning of this answer. As regards civil service position, I will write to the Honourable Gentleman in coming days to provide a bigger request.
I have to say, Mr. Speaker, that I don't know who is the greatest disciple of Sir Peter Caguana, the Honourable Mr. Lamas or the Honourable Chief Minister. I mean, today I have seen something I didn't think that I would ever see, and that is quoting word for word an answer that Sir Peter had given when he was there, and he stayed in aid of that answer in order to answer a question from this side of the House. Mr. Speaker, the reality in relation to the question that I have asked, the AA vacancies, and I am not commenting one way or the other about whether they should be filled or whether they should not be filled. I'm asking a specific question about government policy in relation to those vacancies. But the reality is that shortly before the general election in 2015, the Honourable the Chief Minister made public statements, and I'm going to say so, made a considerable strong advance about the fact that those AA vacancies had come out and that they were going to be filled, and that here you have a situation where this nasty opposition led by Daniel Seaton wants to contract the civil service, whereas here we are in government led by me and we are releasing these vacancies. Now that was over 2 years ago, because I think these particular vacancies, if my memory serves me right, were advertised either before December of 2014 or just after December of 2014. And therefore I think that the public deserve an answer as to how long at least will the process take for these efficiencies so that we know one way or the other where these vacancies are going to be filled. And I may also, may I also say this, that the position in relation to the public finances of Gibraltar and in relation to whether those public finances could stand increasing in the civil service have been well known well before the 2015 election. And therefore, the question therefore arises as to whether the Chief Minister was entirely candid with those people that were invited to apply for those early vacancies just before the 2015 election.
Well, Mr. Speaker, a very nasty opposition it was, too. Very nasty, Mr. Speaker. So nasty, in fact, Mr. Speaker, that it made some of the elderly residents of the nation fear for their savings in the Gibraltar Savings Bank because of investments that bank had done through credit finance. No, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, the Honourable Gentleman raised the issue of public finances before the election and accused me of not being candid. I'm going to deal with that point. I don't deal with that point.
and the lending that Credit Finance Company Limited had done to the Sunburn, Mr. Speaker, which honourable members said was a huge gamble that could go wrong, Mr. Speaker. I haven't heard them say the word Sunburn since that company announced it had repaid Credit Finance entirely.
So, Mr. Speaker, people will be putting the nastiness
of the opposition into its proper context, Mr. Speaker, into its proper context. But, Mr. Speaker, it is true that I have quoted on two occasions the Statute of Honor as authority for a proposition in this House. I have done so advisedly, Mr. Speaker, because, of course, I am facing, in the context of this question in particular, the Honourable Gentleman of Guyana, who has said only in the previous meeting that he continues to believe in a place of hope called Peter Caguana and the way you should do things. And I am dealing with the Honourable Gentleman who is reputed to have said that Sir Peter Caguana was the greatest libertarian of all time, not of his time, not of his time or of our time. Allegedly, what he said, Mr. Speaker, was that he was the greatest libertarian of all time. But I will give him a buy on that, because whether he said that he was the greatest libertarian of all time, of his time, or of our time, he thought him pretty good. And so, what I don't want to do, Mr. Speaker, is offend the honourable gentleman's sensibility by not quoting Sir Peter with authority for a particular proposition. Now, it also appears to me, Mr. Speaker, that the only thing that unifies them on that side of the House was Sir Peter Caguana and his iron fist, because nobody else seems to be able to keep them together. Not even their common dislike of us sitting on this side of the House. But having said all that, Mr. Speaker, what I have answered is the question that he asked. Why are the vacancies on hold? He asked. He didn't ask until when. He asked why. That is question 678 of 2017. And I have told him why in the context of my first time.
Just one, Mr. Speaker, because I do get a lot of representation. When?
Mr. Speaker, I can separate notice of that question. I put the question next.
Question number 679 of 2017. The Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, is London and Regional still interested in developing a workplace?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, as drafted, that question would appear to be one addressed to London and Regional.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think the Chief Minister should be in a position to answer the question, and that he made a great big announcement in the Tuesday in London in October 2015, making a great big fanfare about London Regional developing looks like civic and advisable tasks, whether London Regional is interested in developing its site.
He's not asking me whether we're involved in discussions with London and Regional or not. He's asking me, is London and Regional still interested in developing the site? Well, that is not a question addressed to me, it's a question addressed to London and Regional. But perhaps, Mr. Speaker, what I should do is, instead of quoting Peter Caguana back at him, I should quote him back at him. Or even he's forgotten in the halcyon days when he didn't carry the responsibility that he carries, perhaps for another few weeks, or perhaps for longer, that he said, before the summer, I would ask that we, as politicians, refrain from making announcements until the ink is dry on the agreement and the money is in the bank. So I'm going to follow his advice, Mr. Speaker. And now, until the agreement is signed, the money is in the bank, I'm not going to give any information about what may be going on.
Mr. Speaker, I love hearing my job quoted back to me. That's always a good sign. Mr. Speaker, will the Chief Minister then confirm that he has no agreement signed with London Regional?
I don't think he needs to answer me that question, because if I had, following his advice, I would have made an announcement. So he might like to hear himself quote it back at himself, but he doesn't seem to pause to work out what it was that he said that is now being quoted back at him.
So, Mr. Speaker, a very simple yes or no answer would be appreciated from the Chief Minister.
Speaker, you see, the trained court examiner is me, Mr. Speaker, and I'm not here to answer questions in the way that the Honourable Gentleman might wish.
Mr. Speaker, I believe here in this part of the House, we are the ones asking the questions. So therefore, Mr. Speaker, I ask the Chief Minister once again, is there or is there not an agreement signed with London Regional?
Mr. Speaker, they are the ones asking the questions, and we, Mr. Speaker, are the ones answering them. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, to use the parliamentary powers used at Westminster, which we might be a little bit more schooled on by the end of the month, although it might or might not be of any use to him, I refer the Honourable Gentleman to the answer I gave a few moments ago.
Question number 680 of 2017. The Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, is the government still in negotiations with Cormoran Holdings Limited in respect of the Blue Water development?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Now that's the better question, Mr. Speaker. Very easy. Yes, sir.
Question number 681 of 2017.
And Mr. Speaker, conscious of my previous statement about not saying anything to sign a deal, I assume that no deal has been signed yet with Cormoran Holdings Limited.
Mr. Speaker, I refer the Honourable Gentleman to the statements he made in lines 1715 to 1720 of the Hansa for this Parliament on Monday, the 26th of June 2017.
Mr. Speaker, I recall when I was a young boy, my grandmother used to tell me, El cuento de la buena pipita. When will this particular cuento de la buena pipita end, and when does the government expect the process with Cormoran Holdings, which is yet again one of those which the Honourable Gentleman announced with great fanfare before the 2015 general election, when does he expect, if at all, that that process will bear fruit for the people of Gibraltar?
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's probably the point that I want to repeat, was one that I started to hear from the Honourable former greatest Gibraltarian of all time, sorry, the former Chief Minister, the former Chief Minister, who may still be the greatest Gibraltarian of all time, in the former Leader of the Opposition's estimation, some years ago. What I told the Honourable Gentleman is we are in negotiations. When we are able to finish those negotiations in a way that is in the interest of the taxpayer, we shall make an announcement. But, Mr. Speaker, they cannot tell us not to make announcements until we have signed agreements and then press us to make announcements before we have signed agreements. Mr. Speaker, I don't tire of saying it, although perhaps I've not said it whilst the current putative leader of the party opposite and also of the opposition has been imposed. But this is starting to become reminiscent of Monty Python. They tell us to do one thing and then ask us to do another. I mean, it really is quite remarkable.
Mr. Speaker, does the Honourable Chief Minister not agree that on this side of the House, and indeed, by extension, the rest of Gibraltar, can treat the announcements that he made in 2015 and this process now with Cormoran Holdings Limited with a huge, huge pinch of salt? Because you have a situation where this is now dragged on for more than 2 years. And I think that people are entitled to a straight answer from the Chief Minister as to when he expects that process to be complete. Or at least for the Chief Minister to come to this House and to say, look, I made the announcement in 2015, and fortunately there have been events that have overtaken that announcement, and therefore I don't believe that this is going to happen. But this is now taken over 2.5 years, and certainly on this side of the House, there's a significant amount of skepticism. Even though, of course, we wanted to succeed, and of course, we wanted to come to fruition, but people are entitled to know, Mr. Speaker, how long the Chief Minister thinks that this process is going to continue.
Mr. Speaker, they announced two projects on the East Side development. The East Side Reclamation, as it was known until 1996 by those who were members of the VSOP, was known as a rat-infested rubbish dump by the then GOP. The morning after the 1996 election, that area became the East Side Reclamation, also in their parlance. And then they did a deal with one developer and then with another, including Norman Foster Designs, and for well nigh on the 15 years that they were in office, they were telling us the point of the Buena Pitita of the cows that Norman Foster was going to build on that land. Right? Now, in all of that time, I will recognize one objectively justifiable delay, the joint sovereignty issue, which stopped things for a considerable time in Gibraltar. It created uncertainty of the future investments in Gibraltar, because of course joint sovereignty with Spain doesn't create certainty or things are going to go better. Joint sovereignty with Spain makes capital fly from the potential that Gibraltar might not be entirely British, as he and I completely agree. Now, we recognize that I have said beyond this house, on television, on two occasions, that Brexit, which happened months after we made this announcement, has had a negative effect on the ability to deliver that project in that way. And therefore, negotiations have been affected by that. Because I've said that already. So we made one announcement about 24 months ago, and something called Brexit happened about 18 months ago. It was the announcement by Mr. Cameron of the referendum, which halted everything, and then the referendum 16 months ago. So, Mr. Speaker, I have recognized that it has effect on the blue water development. Does he simply just want me to keep saying that? Because if he does, is it that he wants me to send out a signal of a lack of confidence in Gibraltar? Because I would have thought that in retirement, in semi-retirement, or in active, what we all need to do is to demonstrate our confidence that Gibraltar is going to do very well in the future, and that projects like Blue Water will not just take off, they will be a great success, whoever is in government, to the profit of our whole community.
You see, of course, everybody wants this particular project, and many other projects to succeed. I mean, I am a partner in a business here in Gibraltar, employing over 300 people. Part of the business belongs to me. If Gibraltar does not do well, I do not do well personally. I hope my family, my children, continue in Gibraltar and continue to thrive and prosper in Gibraltar. But I have a duty to discharge from this side of the house. As every opposition member on this side of the house has a duty to discharge, and that is to ensure that the government is held to account through questions, particularly questions about projects of this nature, because people are entitled to know, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, do I accept that everything that the Chief Minister has said about Brexit? Indeed, even before Brexit, if he reads my 2015 budget speech, the Honourable the Chief Minister will see that I retrace the history of the East Side development. It was a particular project that when the Honourable, the father of the house, was in government, there was quite a lot of optimism that the first USOP government could pull off an East Side development. And if they had, the economy would have grown even further than it did at the time. But it is a particularly difficult project. It's not an easy project. There have been three governments that have attempted to make this project a success. And all that I accept all that. But Mr. Speaker, I think that I am entitled, on behalf of the people of Gibraltar, the next phase of my role is to drill down and to see whether, for example, it is envisaged that rather than having the blue water scheme, which is a rather grandiose scheme which the government announced at the time that would be worth £1 billion, whether it's now envisaged that there might be a smaller scheme worth significantly less. And perhaps may I ask the Chief Minister whether that is the position at the moment, whether the government is trying to downscale or is talking about with the developers the downscaling of this particular project from that £1 billion project to quite something that might be smaller, that might be more manageable, and then of course we would be able to agree down further about whether that involves, for example, hotels, whether it involves marinas, etc. But that's our job. Our job is to ask questions in this house.
Mr. Speaker, really, I always considered him a gift when he was a leader of the opposition. And it's for reasons like this, you see. He says, in this tone of high representation and almost quasi-indignation, it's our role to ask questions, to get to the bottom, to dig. Well, he told us that the budget speaks from the now current active leader of the GSD and of the opposition. Was one of the best that we've ever heard. And in that speech, we are told not to answer questions like the one that he has asked. In other words, we are told by the one hand of the GSD, make statements only when the ink is dry. And we're told by him, in righteous indignation, give us a blow-by-blow account of what's happening on that lot. And he tells us that he has to come here to find out what's happening. Well, I mean, it may be, Mr. Peter, because he seems to have slipped off a little bit from politics, but he's not watching quite as assiduously my direct democracy. But I have dealt with this question when I have had it asked of me by members of that group of people that he used to consider the ring of steel, who nonetheless also honestly discharge their obligations as members of the head of state and ask me difficult questions. And I've given them the answer. So I refer him, Mr. Speaker, to the detailed answers I have already given in public about the progress of negotiations in relation to the East Side and the potential for that plot to change, grow, or to be an alternative use as it develops for the future for Gibraltar. It is, at the end of the day, a property run for Gibraltar. Is an opportunity for further expansion and development of the future. There is the opportunity that the plot might grow further, so that instead of there being a marina which houses boats, there may be more land which houses more property for a larger development. So he needn't, with his eyes cocked on the gallery, hoping to see if he can persuade people that things may not be going quite so well. The gallery is virtual these days, Mr. Speaker. It's not just current. That things might not be going as well, Mr. Speaker, because look, what we all have to ensure is that things do go as well. And members of this side of the House, every single one of them, works every hour that we have available in order to ensure that we do deliver on these and better deals for Gibraltar across our geography and across our portfolio, because that is our obligation, and that is what we will ensure happens, and that is what we will ensure that Gibraltar does very well, Brexit or no Brexit, Mr. Speaker. For his children, for mine, and for all future generations of the country.
Question number 681 of 2017. The Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government confirm that the site in Mantelvania has been sold or is being negotiated to be sold for the amount of £53 million to a hotel developer?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we don't understand that part of the question that says to or negotiated to be sold, when that comes from exactly the person who asked me not to make any statements until things have been signed and ink was dry. But Mr. Speaker, no sir, there have been no negotiations at all with any party at any time for any purpose or any price in respect of the site. The Honourable Member appears to have swallowed an empty rumour hook, line and sinker. He could, however, have worked all this out for himself. When we told him in September, in answer to question 456 of 2017, that there were no plans to relocate Mount Albania. Maybe he's getting forgetful, Mr. Speaker. Or maybe he just needs to learn not to believe everything he hears on his coffee mornings in Main Street and the bars and coffee shops of Gibraltar, which he is happily sipping at taxpayers' expense whilst members are working hard, ministers are working hard for this community.
Question number 682 of 2017. The Honourable R.M. Kenton.
Speaker, I thought we were talking about job descriptions in the electorate, never mind. Speaker, can the government advise for whom it is written or communicated in respect of invitation to ad hoc membership of the Consultative Council and what sort of selection criteria for each individual identified?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
It is his work description and all of our work descriptions to meet members of the electorate for COD, Mr. Speaker. It is in nobody's work description to spoil a rumour, hook, line and sinker, something of which they happily accuse others in this House but don't realise they sometimes fall for too. Mr. Speaker, the government will make a full announcement in respect of ad hoc membership of the Consultative Council in due course.
Mr. Speaker, if I may ask the Chief Minister, have you actually issued any invitation by that today's event?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Speaker, would you be willing to advise the House how many invitations have been issued?
No, sir.
Question number 683 of 2017. The Honourable R.N. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise how it intends to finance the construction of the three new affordable housing schemes announced on the 28th of September 2017?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer the 684.
Question number 684, the Honourable L.S. Dunn.
Mr. Speaker, how does the government envision to finance the affordable housing project?
Answer, the Honourable, the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the government is considering a number of different options to finance the housing project. As the House should appreciate, we are at an early stage of this process, having only just heard expressions of interest that will help with the makeup of these buildings in the form of one bedroom to four bedroom properties. This exercise will have an impact on costs which will need to be included when financing the affordable housing projects. As is required for these large projects, we will be pursuing competitive procurement for the project. It is anticipated that the procurement entity will include a number of options, including design, build, and finance of the project.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to keep Minister to get involved with this question at the end of this. Going back to the construction of the aerial farm site, at Eastern Beach and the Coast Park site. In that development, there's two developments, 944 units situated at a cost of about £115 million, according to the press release in September 2013. That takes about 122,000 per unit. Add a bit of inflation, call that £133,000 per unit. For 1,500 units, that would come to about £200 million. And Speaker, what I'd like the Chief Minister's advice is if these ballpark figures, and again, they are ballpark, how would you intend to finance this construction? Is it by direct government borrowing, or will it be indirect government borrowing through government owned companies?
Speaker, I don't do ballpark, and I've already given my answer.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the question in a much simpler term. Does the government intend to borrow directly in order to finance these projects?
Speaker, although I don't understand the question, but I told him I don't do ballpark, and I've already given the answer as to financing it in my first answer. So, as I said before, he'll realise when he goes to the House of Commons what this phrase means. I refer the Honourable Gentleman to the answer I gave a few moments ago. It's already in the answer.
Mr. Speaker, if I recall the answer correctly, there's an element of design, build, and financing. Can the Chief Minister then confirm that this design, build, and financing will be with a government company or with the government of Gibraltar as the contracting party?
Speaker, he just doesn't get it. The first sentence.
First line is the government is considering a number of different options to finance the housing projects. I think it may be beneficial in the future if we get a copy of that as well. It's very difficult because you overpower me with your wonderful speech.
Question number 685 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Jammin.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide details of the compensation paid to all who suffered and quote excessive delays and quote in completing their purchases of water facilities?
Answer, the Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the issue of delays in payment of compensation has been during the GSD administration for which we are not accountable. This question has been filed as a result of the 2011 manifesto where they pledged that they would be looking into paying out compensation. Therefore, can you please confirm that this government has not paid out any compensation to any purchases of water facilities which have been affected today?
When this administration was elected, all those who have suffered damage have had the amount paid to them or commitments to pay to them entered into by the former administration, which was the administration to be withdrawal, was sent out a notice to the secret organizations and the ministry advice, and everybody who had suffered delay and had suffered loss had had money paid to them by them.
Question 690 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Jammin.
Speaker, can the government explain whether it was this administration's decision to raise the import duty for the construction, fishing out, and equipping of Imperial Ocean Private, and if possible, the estimated revenue this project would have generated had the import duty not been raised?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the certificate of exemption from import duty was signed by me on the 3rd of March 2017. The logic behind the decision of the same has been the case in every instance as a chief minister has raised such duties, namely to encourage development and economic activity and to ensure that such development occurs within a specific period. It is not possible to raise the level of import duty that would have been generated had it not been waived, as presently the site is still in its very early stages of development and very few imports have been registered.
Question number 691, the Honourable L.F. Jammin.
Mr. Speaker, give notice that it's just one question.
Question number 692 of 2017, the Honourable L.F. Jammin.
Mr. Speaker, is the government confident that eligible prospective affordable home purchases will be able to obtain mortgages?
Answer, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, yes, sir.
Answer to written question, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
The leader of the party, my predecessor, now after the House will adjourn.
The House will now adjourn.